Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Season 2, Episode 19. Today, in the second half of the Terrible Podcast, we're going to have an interview with Phil Wilson, a beat writer covering the Indianapolis Colts, the Steelers' opponent, Sunday night at Lucas Oil Stadium. So stay tuned for that. But Dave, good to talk to you. How are things in Florida coming off and win? How many times have you been through the game, Phil?
Been through 5.5 so far. So the wins are always much better to watch than the losses. And, you know, although it was the Seahawks, there were some good things to pick out of the game. And, you know, hopefully we go for another win this week against Indianapolis.
Yep. So we've got the Colts Sunday night game. Obviously, the big issue here for the Colts is no Peyton Manning. And Mike Tomlin held his press conference yesterday. And before we get into the details of him talking about the Colts and what's going on with them, why don't you give us an update on the injury report? And first and most importantly, is the guy who's not on the injury report, Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, Ben, you know, they didn't ask him what was going on yesterday during the presser. I don't know if Tomlin was using the Jedi mind trick on him or whatnot. For one thing, it was encouraging to see Tomlin talk for a full 20 minutes yesterday. He seemed to be in an upbeat mood and all. Scott Brown from the Trib just posted to, you know, just this as we're speaking now, that Roethlisberger's pretty much said it's sore, but it's doing a lot better. And
brace.
Yeah, he was walking without any trace of a limp before practice. So, you know, that's good. And you know, he wouldn't have, like we mentioned in the wrap up of that game, I don't think he would have went back in that game if, especially when it was well out of hand, if you know, if that knee was serious or whatnot. So, you know, let's just say we dodged a bullet there with him. And, you know, as far as the rest of the injury report goes, it looks like Brett Kiesel's going to be down this week. I mean, we'll know more as practice progresses this week. But I think Tomlin called Kiesel questionable at best with his grade 1 PCL sprain. So, you know, I would look for Ziggy Hood to start on at right defensive end. You might see Cameron Hayward actually get a few more snaps in relief. Tomlin also mentioned the position flexibility of Chris Hoke and Steve McClendon. And, you know, I don't think, you know, there's going to be too much of a drop off there, especially against their opponent. The best thing to do with Keese was to keep him down and, you know, not rush him along, because they're going to need him going on this year. And there's no sense to get him back to action real quick. You know, cornerback Brian McFadden and Jericho Cotchery, they're kind of on his watch list, both with the hamstring injuries. Boy, McFadden just can't stay on the field, and Cotchery just can't get on the field since he, you know, suffered that injury against the Eagles in the preseason there. We haven't heard much about what actually is going on with the hamstring with Cotchery, but, you know, and at least there's no rush to get him into the lineup. So
yeah, I think that's one of the key points there. With everybody performing so well, let's get this thing 100%, so we're not dealing with it on a week to week basis. So yeah, I imagine Cotchery's probably down this week as well.
Yeah, and I'm willing to bet, you know, maybe McFadden as well, you know, as well, because let's face it, William Gay and Keenan Lewis, you know, both played well, I thought, against the Seahawks. Now, of course, I hate to keep referencing it just was the Seahawks, but, you know, Jackson had a good completion percentage, but he never went downfield. He pretty much took everything up underneath, which, you know, they try to force quarterbacks to do. So, you know, I don't know how big of a test they're going to get against the Colts. I would imagine that, you know, Ike Taylor's going to be locked up on Reggie Wayne this week, and then the other Collie and the other receivers over there will be
Garcon
will be tended to by combination of Gay and Keenan Lewis if McFadden can't go. Tomlin did hit on Chris Carter. We hadn't heard his name recently. Carter wasn't on the injury report last week, and Tomlin basically said this guy is ready to go, you know, full speed right now. And he said it's an important week for both him and Jason Worlds, as they're going to mimic you know, the Colts defensive ends in Mathis and Freeney. So, you know, that's good news there. Chris Kimoatu, his knee is also up in the air, I would think, too. And, you know, he was down against the Seahawks this past week. And I'm going to be pretty surprised if he goes this week, to be honest with you. But the injury report comes out later today, the first one of the week. And that should, you know, start giving us a glimpse of what's going on going forward.
Yeah, no question. And Tomlin, look, the guy, he's the master of saying a lot of things, but really saying not much. He did talk about the injury report. He talked about both Ligurski and Ramon Foster playing above the line, his standard phrase of whether they met kind of expectations of, you know, did you meet the standard? Both those guys he mentioned, you know, there was a lot of good stuff coming out of that game, but clearly if you're going to point to a negative, it was the Steeler run game, and particularly the run game in the second half when it's just kind of time to ground and pound. They really couldn't do it. They weren't very effective. So that's going to be a big, important point of focus for this team going forward. And what he was focused on with the Colts was really the big question is they don't have Peyton Manning. They went out and signed Kerry Collins to be the guy to take his place. I think there was a little bit of initially – certainly a little bit of a disgruntled response, particularly from Reggie Wayne saying, you know, we don't need to bring a guy in to do this. We've got guys on the roster. Curtis Painter can be that guy. We've got other guys here. But obviously the Colts thought with their sophisticated offense and Kerry Collins' experience that he could be the guy to come in and do it. And they went in and got absolutely housed in Houston the first week, 34-0 at halftime. I think the final score ended up 34-7. And then they lost the game to the Browns where they played better but didn't get it done against Cleveland at home. This is a team that the Steelers will take them seriously because it's the NFL and anything can happen. But again, much like the Seattle game last week, this is a game the Steelers should be able to take care of business. And it was even tough for the writers and the audience to take it too seriously when Tomlin spoke as highly as he did of Kerry Collins.
Yeah, Tomlin really builds this team up, or any team for that matter, in his weekly press conference like it's a team that's going to go to the Super Bowl. And, you know, he really glossed it on heavy yesterday. You know, David, one thing I noticed, I went back, I watched a lot of the Colts-Browns game last night, and that was, that was tough to do. There was a shot late in the game of Reggie Wayne on the sideline when they were down quite a bit there, and he looked about as interested in the game. You know, he really looked like, oh, Lord, it's going to be a long season. And, you know, for him to make those comments, you know, when the loss of Manning was happening and all like that, you know, their offense just without Peyton, I mean, it's so obvious that they're not able to do certain things. And, you know, with some of the packages that they use, they always seem to line Reggie Wayne up on that left side. It doesn't look like they get too terribly creative. I think the biggest guy that you have to watch, and Tomlin hit on this yesterday, was Dallas Clark. This is a guy that can move the chains on you, you know, in an instant. And if you shut down their running game and make Kerry Collins pick you apart up underneath like they try to make all quarterbacks do, it could be a long day for them. I think you could see a little bit like what you saw against the Seahawks. I think they don't really have a deep threat or the ability really to stretch the field deep. So I think you could see Troy in the box quite a bit with a lot of attention paid, you know, to Dallas Clark in their passing game, making sure he doesn't beat you. I think if the Colts have any chance to win this game, they have to run the ball well, and they have to, you know, get Colley and Garcon, you know, heavily involved in the passing game, because I think Ike Taylor has what it takes to take Reggie Wayne out of the game. And, you know, just on paper initially, and we'll get with, you know, when we talk to the Indianapolis Star beat writer here in a little bit, we'll ask him to go a little bit deeper on this. But, you know, there's no reason to think that the Steelers won't, you know, get a win here.
Yeah, I'm with you on everything you said. They've got a young left tackle, Anthony Costanzo, out of BC, who we both liked, their first-round pick. He's right in there starting at left tackle. They've got a diet running back, but their line's a little different. They've got some younger guys in there, and we'll see what happens. And just like you said, we'll get into that much deeper. I did think the interesting thing Tomlin noted, and it's probably worth saying, is this is the same week that the Steelers played Kerry Collins last year. The third week, went to Tennessee. I went down to that game. and Kerry Collins came in as a reserve off the bench in replace of Vince Young and did actually move the ball a couple times. They turned it over. Troy made I think Troy made that pick against Kerry. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, so, you know, he'll be able to show them some film of Kerry Collins last year moving the ball a little bit against the Steelers, blah, blah, blah. But that was what kept him focused in the press conference yesterday. And, of course, we'll get into the defensive side of things, and they do have those two very special defensive ends in Mathis and Freeney. But, Dave, I wanted to get to the Steelers' offensive line. Your grades are up. You've gone through the film, graded guys out. And I don't think surprisingly, but maybe surprising to some people, Ramon Foster really graded out well. In fact, best of all the Steeler linemen in the game Sunday against the Seahawks.
Yeah, and it really was a little bit of a surprise to me. I mean, you know, he didn't perform very well in preseason, you know, from what I saw in the snaps that he got at left guard there, and he never was in the running for the right guard spot. I mean, let's face it, they went Chris Scott and then went Tony Hills and then settled with Ligurski there. But I really thought Foster – you know, played a great game, not only in pass protection, but his run blocking as well. And of course, it was highlighted by that, you know, great blocking scheme and execution by the Steelers on a 20-yard touchdown run by Isaac Redman. And I've got, you know, a good 11 picture post up on that as well. And you can see how, you know, it was a little bit of a delay by Foster, you know, pulling to the right there, but his timing was perfect on it and pretty much took out three guys with the player, shielded them at least after some nice blocking by the others on the line there. Foster really played well. He really looked comfortable on that left side there. You know, Ligurski, as far as my grade goes, you know, Ligurski was not awful. It wasn't, I didn't think he was manhandled like he was against Nada in week one against the Ravens, but it still seems at times when he's the point of attack and has to win the one-on-one battles, it's not like he gets blown off the ball, but it just seems like it ends in a stalemate pretty much in the hole there. And then this, of course, forces Mendenhall, Redmond, or whoever to have to bounce outside. They're a lot more effective, it seems, when they're able to go two-on-one, you know, to give Ligurski help. And, you know, Ligurski I didn't think was awful in pass protection. But, you know, the run game could get some support. But, I just fear right now, and I wrote how Foster's probably pushing to reclaim a starting role. I think the real wild card here is Kimo Atu, because I'm concerned about that knee right now. You know, if he's missing a game already this early in the season after missing all that time in preseason and training camp on PUP, you know, I don't think this is the last game that he's missed. So, you know, do you keep juggling your offensive line? You know, 1 week putting Foster at right guard if Kimo plays, and the next game Kimo doesn't play, do you switch him back to left guard? So, you know, going forward, it's hard to say, you know, what they're going to do there. I think Foster did perform above the line. I thought Marcus Gilbert, great game, although he did have quite a bit of help with the tight ends over there and the backs chipping and all. And the sack, I think we kind of talked about this in the recap, kind of hard to know exactly what the – you know, assignment was on that play. A little tough for a guy to get outside, punch inside and get out real quick on a blitzing, you know, Atari Bigby there. But outside of that, the spin move that Brock beat him on that resulted in the Roethlisberger knee injury, I thought he overall played a good game. And, you know, that leaves us with Jonathan Scott, you know, and Jonathan Scott was Jonathan Scott. I don't know how to paint that, you know, any different than what he is. He's going to give up pressures. He's going to give up an occasional sack. He's not very sound in the running game. But, hey, they won with him at left tackle last year after Max Starch went down. So,
yep. I guess that's pretty much what we talked about after the game. When on our Monday thing, we pretty much came to that same thing. You just wonder, pounding the ball against some of these bigger lines, how that's going to go. The other thing that you put up on the site, SteelersDepot.com, is you had the defensive participation chart. My takeaway from that, no surprises, except that 7 of the 8 linebacker defensive back starters, meaning all 4 defensive backs who started and the three linebackers except for James Ferrier, played all 47 snaps defensively. It's not a big surprise, but 24-0, they weren't really shuffling in Jason Worlds or Stevenson Sylvester to get him any snaps late in the game. I think they probably wanted to get the shutout, but just something worth noting on that participation. Anything further from that you saw?
No, you know, Harrison, it was good, like you just hit on it. I mean, to get all plays out of him in that game, You know, if they were worried about the guy, they would have shuffled Worlds in there a little bit more. It's not it's not uncharacteristic that Woodley and Timmons played the whole set there. You know, and nor is it, you know, surprising that Ryan Clark and Polamalu also played the full, you know, set of plays as well. William Gay, you know, this is a guy that was in there the whole time. And, you know, Keenan Lewis, of course, came in on, you know, straight base formations there. But I thought William Gay and Keenan Lewis played well. And we talked at the start of the show there how probably McClendon and Hoke are likely to see an increase in snaps along with Cameron Hayward this week, you know, with Kiesel down. But, you know, overall, not any huge surprises outside of maybe the Ferrier and Foot split. And it's not really a split. Ferrier, you know, basically had them, you know, 2-1 there, I think, as far as snaps go. So not much sticks out this week.
Dave, let me throw something at you that I haven't thrown at you before. You and I haven't broached this topic. I haven't seen it talked about anywhere. I did see the Player X article on ESPN.com talking about the effect of the lockout. Let me throw something that just a whole different point of view. Everybody felt like the Steelers were going to be way ahead of the curve here, coming in as a veteran team, having the same two coordinators, everything kind of you know, hunky-dory for this team. We didn't see much offseason activity. The Steelers went ahead and signed their own. Cotri is one of the guys they brought in, but he obviously hasn't played yet in a regular game, and the rookies haven't had much of an impact. So everybody thought this would be advantageous to the Steelers. Is there a chance that we got this all wrong and the Steelers coming in and not having the OTAs and being maybe a little less focused and maybe not sitting on their laurels, but they come in and not that they're lackadaisical, but getting the defense in, getting the schemes fit, getting everybody in the right place at the right time. The Steelers weren't maybe as keened up as they would be in week one. And Ben, who last year had to be as focused as he ever was in his life, spent that 4 weeks with the quarterback coach. You know, he had the reps in training camp and then had to spend 4 weeks by himself. You can imagine he was as focused as he's ever been on getting his technique right, getting everything down. And he comes in this year and maybe he doesn't have as many reps. He doesn't have as many reps with the guys because of the OTAs, doesn't have as many reps in the preseason games. And the season starts, and he certainly hasn't played badly, but he's been high with balls in the first two games, a little bit sloppy throwing on the run. Maybe the Steelers aren't as in tune as we expected them to be.
Well, you know, the age-old saying, practice makes perfect. And I, you know, I think from a conditioning standpoint, I think we've seen some examples of that in the first two games. They looked like they were flying around a lot better this past week against the Seahawks. You know, timing's everything, and that supposedly as far as offense goes. And you know, let's not forget that Hines Ward missed a few of the early practices with being on PUP, sort of start the training camp session there. The offensive line was juggled quite a bit. You know, you had all those free agents that were not able to practice for a good part of the opening week or two. So I think it's just an execution standpoint and you know, as far as a conditioning standpoint of why you kind of saw such a slow start. I don't know what to pin it on other than that. I don't think that they're just an overconfident bunch. Now, they might have been a little overconfident heading into the Ravens game, but
maybe.
But the execution just wasn't there, though. So, you know, maybe you just – I don't know. And the Ravens, that was their Super Bowl to start the season on top of it. So, we see what a letdown they had the next week against Tennessee. But I don't know. It's hard to pin what the blame is thus far. I mean, let's face it, they got a shutout in week two, albeit against a Seahawks team that could probably petition to get into the ACC. It's hard to point a finger at it, David. And I think we'll start to see, hey, let's face it, we're going to know by week four when they play these Texans, you know, in a few weeks of where they really stand. And they should win this week. If they don't win against the Colts, I think they're, you know, that's a cause to be an alarm, you know, to be alarmed there. But I don't know what else to tell you outside of that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the thing that maybe you and I expected and a lot of Steeler fans expected is to see them come out and play at a really high level in week one. That obviously didn't happen. And I think the two games they've played are really nondescript. We haven't had a ton to talk about. They got you know, turned the ball over seven times against the Ravens and basically got blown out. And then they played a not good Seattle team and took care of business, no problem. We can find things to nitpick about in the run game and a few other things, but basically that was an easy game for them. So we haven't had a lot of fodder for us to talk about when breaking down things and talking about decisions that were made in the game. Neither game had any tactical decisions of note. I mean, we can talk forever about, you know, Tomlin challenge in the first series, the ball at the 1 yard line, but no real tactical decisions, no real play calling decisions to discuss. So in that sense, maybe a little bit boring. What we want to see here this week is a step forward on, you know, on both sides of the ball. I think continuing to get pressure on the quarterback, maybe earlier in the game, getting some hits on Kerry Collins. You know, you're going to have much more explosive receivers and a better quarterback. So that's just a given. This team is going to be better offensively, even without Peyton Manning, to be a better offensive team than Seattle. And then you've got a you know, some very good defensive players on that side. And you want to see the Steelers be able to run the ball. I think, again, they'll be effective throwing the ball. But I think what we want to see is step forward in each of these games, because just what you said, you want to go into that Texans game in week four ready to play, because that team looks like it has taken a big step forward defensively. They've already got tons of offensive weapons. And then the Steelers are going to play, you know, Tennessee, and who knows what we have in Tennessee. They've got Chris Johnson, who didn't do much in this game against the Ravens, but they certainly had enough to beat the Ravens. So all of a sudden, maybe that game becomes much more challenging than the Indianapolis game that people were looking at and saying, wow, that's a big one on the schedule very early. So that's my take, is we want to see this continued improvement. We didn't see the Steelers come in at kind of 8 out of 10 on the scale of where they can play. We saw them come in at maybe 4 out of 10, and maybe last week they were at 6 out of 10. I'd like to see them continue to raise that level.
Yeah, I agree, and I think you're going to see, you know, you saw them scale it back a little bit on offense. I'm going to have later on today or tomorrow, I'll have my formations up, or personnel groupings, and how they performed, you know, in the passing game and running game. But, you know, as expected, I think we saw a lot more 12 and 13 personnel on the field with the 2 and 3 tight ends. A little bit of that was to support Marcus Gilbert a little bit. As far as them not being able to run good in the second half, let's face it, you know, the Seahawks, once they got that big lead, the Seahawks knew they were going to try to run the ball, and the safeties come up, to counteract that and all. So that has a little bit to do with it. And it might be a conditioning standpoint too. And Tomlin will never let those serve as excuses, but you know, that could be a little bit to that. I think they're going to run the ball at those smallish defensive ends this week. And I think they're going to stay with a little bit with the basics. A lot of only, few three wide receiver sets, and, you know, take their chances with some quick hits to Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown like they use. But yeah, I'm with you. They could have started faster, but hey, they're 1-1. They got a good chance to move to 2-1, and they have to be on all cylinders before they head down to Houston.
All right, well, that's going to wrap things up for part one of the Terrible Podcast, episode 19. We'll be right back with Phil Wilson, beat writer for the Indianapolis Colts from the Indianapolis Star. You're listening to Dave and Dave, Terrible Podcast.
As technical issues sometimes happen and rear their ugly head, our interview with Phil Wilson got corrupted. But good news, we have him rescheduled for Thursday, and we'll knock that out and probably include it in the Friday podcast. Once again, you see why we called this the Terrible Podcast, because sometimes we make mistakes. Thanks for listening, as always, and tune in for the Friday episode as we get ready to break down the Colts.